From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. A protest this weekend at the site of a proposed natural gas power generator on the Cape Cod Canal highlights the controversy surrounding the rise of natural gas. Some say it's an improvement over other fossil fuels and a necessary bridge to a more renewable energy system. Others say it's still a fossil fuel, and we should be investing in solar and wind instead. Hear what the director of MIT's Energy Initiative has to say on that topic. Also, most American teens have a smartphone. In fact, many seem glued to theirs. And a researcher at San Diego State University says it's taking a toll on teens' mental health, causing a spike in depression and suicide rates. But she says taking the phones away isn't necessarily the answer. More on that later this hour. We start today with our monthly dose of science headlines with our friends at Nature. Carrie Smith is the feature editor for the journal Nature. Carrie, it's good to talk with you again.
Thanks for having me, Heather.
Argentina, several weeks ago or a few weeks ago, lost contact with one of its military submarines. This was in mid-November. And there's been an international effort to locate it. The Woods Hole-based research ship Atlantis is involved, and so is an international group that normally spends its time monitoring nuclear test activity. So what's the latest there?
Right. As you say, in mid-November, Argentina's Navy lost contact with this submarine called the San Juan. And then about a week ago, the organization that detects nuclear explosions, essentially, around the world, picked up a signal on their network of sensors near the last known location of the submarine. They're an organization called the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty Organization, which is a bit of a mouthful. And in the past, they've actually been involved in similar efforts to find signals related to lost submarines and even the Malaysian Airlines flight MH370.
So what exactly is this network and how does it help find things like missing submarines or downed airliners?
So it's a network of lots of different types of sensors. They have seismic sensors, infrasound and hydroacoustic sensors, and they monitor them 24/7. They can even monitor them in real time. And two of their stations, which monitor underwater signals, picked up the same signal and have been used to kind of triangulate an ellipse of the sea in which they think this submarine then might be residing.
All right. Well, Nature recently had a story about computer-controlled electrical brain implants. Now, this quite frankly sounds terrifying to me, but the goal is to help treat mental health disorders. So how would this work?
Right. So this is some research that's funded by the U.S. military's research arm, DARPA. And actually, yeah, it does kind of sound a bit scary that you might have an implant in your brain delivering electrical pulses to regulate something like mood. But in fact, thousands of patients around the world who have Parkinson's disease, who haven't responded very well to drugs for that condition, already have these implants, which are referred to collectively as deep brain stimulation. And there's now some suggestion, as there has been in the past, tentatively, that these could be used for conditions like depression, where drugs haven't worked. And the difference here with these new ones that are being reported is that they can switch on only when you need them. So not just always putting in a signal whether you need it to replace your current brain signal or not, but actually sensing a pattern of maybe unhealthy activity and starting the stimulation at that point.
I mean, that sounds like a great improvement, but at the same time, the way it does that is by constantly monitoring brain activity and then making a decision, whether that's another person somewhere or an intelligent computer program making a decision about whether or not you need some sort of treatment at that point. I mean, doesn't that open this up for some sort of mind control? And the fact that it's being funded by DARPA, by the military, I mean, has to make you wonder if there is perhaps a darker motive to funding some of this research.
Yeah, I mean, DARPA fund a lot of research that's very basic in nature, actually. So who can tell? I mean, I can't really assume what their eventual motives are, but many of them relate to treating, you know, veterans who come back from war zones with conditions like post-traumatic stress disorder and depression. But yeah, you're right that this raises some really interesting, perhaps, or difficult ethical issues. So there'll be access that these implants will have to how a feeling or a mood is encoded in someone's brain. And then, as you say, this information has to go somewhere and be be decoded and then a signal given back as a result? And would the person have any control over that? Possibly not. I mean, there's also the issue of overcorrection. So maybe this is already the case with some drugs, for instance, because it's very hard to kind of titrate the level of drug that you're giving someone and the effect it might have. But, you know, the last thing we want is for everybody's mood to just be continually sort of flatlining all the time, even if you feel happy as the patient.
I'm talking with Carrie Smith. She's features editor for the journal Nature. We've heard a lot about gene editing technologies this year, but most of that at least works with standard DNA. There are kind of four bases that all DNA that we've ever encountered here on Earth is built out of. But apparently some researchers want to expand the genetic code, create new bases to add into DNA. Why? What's the motivation or the goal there?
Well, I suppose one goal is, what if? I mean, what if we had these bases? What would they look like? How would they work? This is just, you know, what if our alphabet had, our genetic alphabet had more than four letters? Could we make more than the 20 amino acids that DNA already can do for us? So there's this fundamental quest to just understand how the language of DNA works and try and interpret it perhaps in this different way or add to it. And then there's a possibility, and I think this is kind of quite far into the future, that if you could make DNA work with these extra letters, that you might be able to tweak it in certain useful ways, maybe make drugs better or more easily taken up by a cell, or even give new properties to stretches of DNA.
Those kind of uses may be well into the future, as you say, but recently a team at Scripps Research Institute in La Jolla, California, actually announced that they've at least grown bacteria with DNA that included two of these synthetic bases. So clearly making progress in this direction.
Definitely. I mean, this is I just think it's a really, and I think the guy who did the work, who's and his team, who's called Floyd Romesberg, he's at Scripps Institute in La Jolla in California. He's been after this for, you know, a couple of decades. And I think even as a kid, there's a quote in the piece that our reporter got from speaking to him where he says, I feel like a kid in a candy store. I'm now in the candy store and able to see what candy I can buy. And what his team have most recently just published in Nature is an addition of two bases, X and Y, to the four that you mentioned already exist, A, T, C, and G. And the idea that they would like to execute is to make more alien amino acids with their alien DNA.
Well, I don't know about candy store, but it sounds like he's in the kitchen making alphabet soup. Last but not least, a science angle on the recent political upheaval in Zimbabwe. Apparently, scientists are among those celebrating the departure of former President Robert Mugabe and hoping that all of this change could actually improve their situation. I mean, what are they actually hoping will come out of this for them?
They're probably hoping the same as many Zimbabweans are, that this shift in the political situation could help the economy. That would have an obvious effect perhaps on how much funding is available for science and, of course, for everything else that keeps the economy, that keeps the society running. And I think some Zimbabwean scientists who've been obliged to work abroad because there just were very few opportunities in their homeland would be eventually tempted back to the country by a shift in power. If the recent shift in power, you know, continues in the way that people hope it will, towards perhaps a lifting of the sanctions, more funding coming back to Zimbabwe from collaborating better with other countries. So I think there's a sense of optimism alongside the caution that we don't really know what the upshot will be yet.
That's Carrie Smith. She's features editor for the journal Nature. Carrie, thanks so much.
Thank you.